So are you recording?
Yes.
All right.
Hey.
Jim is our.
There's the acting sort of secondary vice chair. We'll call the meeting order, call the roll. I'm Jim Couts.
Teresa Meyer.
John Jay.
Delina Burley.
Tanya Dow.
Marshall, Council District Five.
Amy Arnold.
I'm Jim Pittman.
Don?
Here, Don Meeks, I'm here.
And we have Counselor Belcott online.
Hello, here.
And we have staff of Danielle Cowley and Wendy Wallach outlined. Are there any other people out there to capture in our minutes? I'm Rocky Houston. Once we've, since I was new, there's a lot of new people here.
Yes.
Maybe we take a moment where we would all the Parks Advisory Board members would, you know, follow my lead. I'm Rocky Houston. I'm with the Parks Department. I've been here for about 20 months. For full disclosure, Galena hired me, but I never worked with her.
It's true, it's true.
Back in July 12th of 2021. I live in Vancouver, no, Cancouver area, so sort of unincorporated urban area. My passions are governance and moving the goalposts forward, you know, with parks. So I like to have a plan, work plan, and see smiles. My motto is that the work I do is invisible if we're doing it right. And so a lot of the work that we do as you look outside is that they're here for the experience and for the memory, and Clark County Parks, Rockies, really tertiary. It's about just having this facility here to do that work. So, Jim.
My name is Jim Couts. I've been on the board since January of last year. I live in Vancouver. I have two kids. I guess one of my passions is youth sports. Other things.
Hi, I'm Teresa Meyer. I have been on the board since a year ago, January. And I live in Vancouver on the almost in campus. So I live on Fisher's Landing area. And I've been in Vancouver for the last 9 years is all. So I'm kind of a new person to this area, but I love it. My mother was from Oregon, so I feel like I can just say my mother was from Oregon. I'm not from the Midwest. But my passions are being outside. I belong to a women's hiking group. I do a lot of stewardship things with in Oregon and Washington. And so I'm a user and want to see everything improve and stay the same. That's great.
My name is John Jay. I'm new to the board. I'm also relatively new to Clark County. I've lived here for a little over a year. I'm pretty passionate about civic involvement in government, as well as participating in government as well. And my hobbies would include cycling, hiking, and things of that nature. And then my day job, I work at USAA in marketing insurance. So.
My name is Galena Burley. I am new to the board, not super new to the process of parks. I guess I should full disclosure, since Rocky mentioned, I manage parks and lands for the county for essentially the entire duration of COVID. That takes a toll on a person, so I'm happy to say I am now with ARC, working for the city of Richfield. I manage their brand new department, just starting out, building everything from scratch. A lot of fun. I am here, however, as a volunteer on my own time, on my own dime, like everyone else. I live in Brush Prairie. I have a very active, athletic daughter. So for me, my passions are certainly youth sports, but also inclusion and equity. And probably the most important piece for me right now is aging in place initiatives that are happening throughout our system. How do we make sure that you know, the whole system's accessible to everyone, but more specifically, how do we design it around people who want to stay in their home, age in their home, and stay in their community. So that's kind of my thing right now.
My name is Tanya Dow. I'm new to the Parks Board. I feel like I'm maybe an older member in the community, though I don't feel that old. I've lived here for the last 25 years. And as far as my background professionally, I'm an engineer. My background's in transportation, the water system. And as far as why I'm on the Parks Board, you know, like most other people, I like to go out to the parks and I can use them with my family. But I would like to see, you know, more parks developed in some of the areas where maybe there aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess Don.
Hey everybody, my name. Oh, did you call me out, Rocky? I thought you did.
I did, and I apologize. We were looking at a counselor as well, and she's on a different board, county council.
Oh, we have a council member here, I guess. Okay, I'm among celebrities, I guess. I didn't realize. My name is Don Meeks. I've been a board member along with Jim and Teresa, I guess, a year and a few months. I work for the Department of Natural Resources as a service forester. I live up against Livingston Mountain, and I have memberships and participation in any number of organizations from the VFW to the Washington Tree Farmers Association. So hobbies are relatively the same as everybody else in the Pacific Northwest. Love to be outside. I haven't met anybody yet that says they love to be indoors watching Netflix all day, but they're probably out there. I haven't met them yet.
You haven't met them outside.
Exactly. Right.
Wonderful. We don't have anyone else who doesn't know how to do this stuff on there for Teams guidelines. So we don't need to cover that. We already did roll call. I guess now it's approval of minutes. We have several sets of minutes here. Seems that we've not had a quorum for 12 months. So as such, there's quite a few sets of minutes.
I think we have 7 sets of minutes starting last April. And then we sent them out to everyone. We can go through individually, or we can approve them en masse and call it good.
En masse is good for me because I did read them all.
I think before the meeting minutes, I have not attended all of these. So I could only approve the one that I did attend in November.
And how does that work?
We still have a quorum.
So they can just approve them when they have made and attend the meeting. Okay.
Yeah, I would just abstain.
We even have a quorum without you.
Right. So if you want to abstain, Tanya, that's fine. And if others do want to vote, I would strongly encourage four people to vote so that we can get this behind us and move forward on to new business.
Rocky, can our motion be stated as such, though, that we approve these minutes as part of the documentation process with a caveat that some members have not attended these meetings before?
If so moved.
It's second.
Is it second?
I second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Jim.
Don said aye as well.
He waved. Cool. That was our major voting source of business of the day. First vote we had in the year, which is quite impressive. I don't think we have any public comment, do we? Amy? Okay. It's all yours, sir.
All right. From the manager's report, so department updates. So I'll start off with is we've got some new faces here in parks. One of those is behind me. It's Jacob Houston. Don't worry, there's no nepotism. His family used a different spelling of Houston. Didn't meet him until after he was hired. Well, I guess there was a second interview. But
So, Jacob, do you want to put you on the spot, or do you want me to tell you a little bit about you?
All right, so real quick, I'm retired military, 21 years in the Air Force. Did 2 years of the Calhoun County's Facilities Director, then tried out as an educator, and now I'm here. So I'm excited, love the parks, love to be outside. I've lived here my whole life, grew up till 19, moved away for 21 years, moved back 4 years ago after I retired, and I'm here to stay. So definitely like to make the county a better place.
And he is filling part of our capital programming team. So he is the capital program specialist. Yes, got the title right. And so that's a new position. That's part of those three positions we got in this fiscal year to help with our capital program. We have our capital program project manager coming on board on Monday, and her name is Evelyn Ives. And so she is a PE. Has been working in environmental sciences, environmental engineering.
PE means professional engineer.
Thank you. She's coming over from working in the private sector for a consulting firm for the last 12 years, I believe.
Yeah.
And so she's looking to contribute back to the community and engage with her skill set in a different way. So we're excited to have her come on board. I communicated at our last meeting, but for those who knew, we had a planner three, which was a promotion from within. That's Lindy Wallach. She was our planner two. So we promoted her to the three. We started interviews today and next week for the planner two position. So we're hoping we'll have a candidate finalized before our next meeting. And so we'll be introducing them when they come on board. We have three positions on our maintenance side, our ground maintenance side for parks, sort of in the hopper. So we've got finalists, background checks. Now we're just waiting for fingerprints. So because of the parks district, we have that extra layer of review that occurs. And that usually takes anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks to get that back. And so we're week three, I believe. So we should be getting confirmation this week to be able to bring those three people on. We had a retirement announced in the last couple of weeks, Stephanie Trotter. And so she is leaving at the end of the month. We have that position open currently out on the street, so to speak, looking to get that position filled as soon as possible, given this time of year. And we also filled a noxious weed position. And I think I filled it from before, and I just don't have his name off the top of my lips, but he started 2 weeks ago. So I think this is his second week. I don't know. I think so. But so we're we're so close to 100% of our position, which is a first since I've been here. We've had been down 10 or 11 positions at times. And so for a variety of reasons, you know, people retiring, finding other job opportunities, et cetera. So we're trying to get the wobble of the boat to settle it out and continue to focus on that work. And what else do we got going on? We're waiting for the sunshine to come out, so it keeps raining, but mowing's gonna become very, very crazy real quick. Like right now, right now, as you can look at our baseball fields here, we're getting too much of the wet stuff. That's just the nature of these unique changes to our weather system. We continue to work on hazard tree mitigation. So we've got another contract getting ready to go out to bid. Hopefully next week. And I think there's two or three parks that are part of that scope of work
for now.
And I'd also, I want to turn this over to David now to kind of just talk about our planning efforts. Last meeting, we sort of talked about getting an update on our capital plan, and I just wanted him to focus on those planning efforts for master plans and other planning efforts that we're underway with right now. So, David.
I don't know if Rocky mentioned the Harmony Sports Park upgrades, and that we're getting back under contract with the consultant to finish those drawings. It's primarily a vehicular circulation, frontage improvement, and signal improvement project at this point. We just submitted our update for Q1 for the CIP and Kirk Creek. We ambitiously thought we could get it done in 23, but contracting with the consultant to finish the drawings has taken longer than anticipated. Now we're probably going to be out 24 for that project.
So there's a new wrinkle to our transparency for our capital projects and programming. Instead of coming back to council once a year and kind of providing updates, what we're now doing is quarterly updates. And so we're looking at our capital plan, and then once a quarter, we're given an update. As you all know who do project delivery, it's dynamic, and minor little things can change construction season from this year to next year. And so again, to where there's fewer surprises, you know, we had a project that we got approval for in 2009. It's being constructed right now. And so there was a change in the budget. And so this, and over that period of time, there's going to be a change in the budget just based off of inflation. So this is a way to kind of make sure that questions are getting answered, and there's just that update. So when the next budget cycle comes around, there isn't these huge swings, and not with some context. And so as such, we're preparing that report now. I think our presentation's May 10th, I think it was rescheduled to, where we'll have a small presentation at that time. That's right around when our next meeting is. And so we'll probably present that same information right then or soon after. So we'll make sure you guys see what's going to council as well. Sorry, sir.
That's okay. Tim Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park. We have in the 23 capital plan to finish the plans for that. So you'll hear me say PSNE a lot, plan specifications and estimates. That's just basically another fancy acronym for contract drawings to build something, to bid and build something. So we went through a consultant selection process, the public works process to select a consultant, and we're going to sit down with them with Excel Tech to do scope and fee negotiation for developing those drawings. We also did the same thing. We went through the same process for Pacific Community Park. If you remember in our presentation about the CIP, it's to complete the ball field complex that was started in phase one. So there's an open field to the east of the senior softball field that had some ball fields identified in the master plan, and to add some pickleball courts, which will be well received by the community. And we went through an interview process, and we're going to start a scope of fee negotiation with McKay and Esposito to prepare those drawings for us. There's a master plan type one or type two site plan review that needs to go through the community development department for that, because we're adding pickleball courts. Lindy Wallach is getting ready to start actually kicking off the Minnehaha Neighborhood Park master plan project. We've engaged ESA in the development of that master plan, and the kickoff meeting is in the next week or so. And then we're going to be adding Cougar Creek back to the CIP, and we may still do a consultant selection for that this year, and we'll probably end up doing a master plan update for Orchards. There's an RC remote control car course that was added to the park. without the proper process. And so we're going to go through a public process, a master plan update for that, do a little ADA improvements in that park to improve mobility access from the parking lots to the picnic shelter, which is somewhat problematic now.
It's just come to my attention that we have three counselors that are at this meeting. I believe that we've announced it accurately, so we have a public meeting, it's noticed. I don't know if there's a policy or practice that council has that allow a quorum when business is done. We've not heard back from our inquiry from last month when we came up, so.
Yes, there's a quorum issue, and I'm going to jump off.
You were on first, Michelle. I will go ahead and jump off.
It appears that Michelle's already jumped off, Glenn. Oh.
I apologize. I was wondering that, but I couldn't see. Is there somebody in person there?
There's one person.
Yeah, Sue is in person.
Okay. All right. I apologize for that. I'll message her, and if she wants to come back on, she can come on. She was here first. So thanks for bringing that to our attention.
Rocky, thank you for doing that.
Thank you for...
Do you have a different consultant for each project?
Yes.
So that's how they can, I mean, a lot of consultants in the area that you could use to
utilize. Yes. So there's the municipal research and something, the MRSC, which they maintain a statewide roster of consultants. And our public works process is for anything under $200,000 fee-wise, is to go through a MRSC solicitation. So we basically go to the website and select the services that we need, and then ask the folks that come up on that list if they're interested in providing these services. So we send them a request for qualifications. We review the request for qualifications, and we evaluate the submissions and shortlist to a list of firms that we're going to interview, and then we interview the firms with a panel, and we score them again, and then we enter into scope and fee negotiation. It's different than personal services. So professional services is anything that would require a stamp. So landscape architects, architects, engineers, anything that requires a stamp to get approval or permitting to build, you have to select the most qualified firm. You can't select the cheapest firm. It's the opposite in the contracting business. I mean, it's also different if you were hiring somebody to do facilitation. You could shop for price, but in this case, you can't. And so we maintain a public works roster of engineering firms that do provide landscape architecture and park planning services, and we can use that as a back check for the MRSC roster, but it's a much smaller list. When we select landscape architecture, park planning and design, and engineering, it's 180 firms or something crazy like that. Of the three MRSC solicitations that we've done this year, two of them we've only received three statements of qualification, and one of them we've received five.
Is there a minimum? Do you have to have at least three bids or three people that are interested or not?
No, you don't. You have to basically solicit for.
You solicit in the
And if nobody, if nobody submits, then your project's not very exciting, probably. If three people submit. So in the case where we did only had three submissions, we interviewed all three firms. We did an evaluation of the documents they submitted, but we still interviewed all three firms. And again, it's based on qualifications, and most of the firms that submit can do the work. It's just a matter of evaluating who the most foul ball paired for the for the submission and the interview. So it's not uncommon to have several different consultants doing things for us at any given time. I think it's equitable. So not
use the same firms.
Yeah, but that being said, PBS is a pretty regular firm. Actually, I forgot to mention that we did do selection for some improvements to Hazeldale, and PBS was the firm that we selected through that same process. And PBS is doing Camp Bonneville water quality monitoring. They're doing the Camp Hope water system improvement drawings. And so they have a long track record with public works, doing good work for public works. So I think that's about it on sort of the capital planning side. We are getting ready to do, we have been working on a DEI diversity, equity, and inclusion plan for parks. And Lindy's also been working on that. And it's going to get folded into a much larger countywide DEI effort. And so we don't want to put something out there that is contrary to other goals and objectives that have been expressed by other departments. And then we're doing an ADA transition plan. So with the Americans with Disabilities Act, you're supposed to have a transition plan. If you're an organization like we are, and we don't have one, and so we're going to work on that. You have to identify your barriers to access, and then you have to identify a process to head toward full access, which isn't achievable, but under the rules of the Americans with Disability Act, access is where feasible. So there are just parts of the system where you can't provide the access by the geometry of design. And so you just have to identify your barriers and prioritize them.
It's like a capital plan, essentially. So you identify where those gaps are and identify a mechanism of achieving it over a 20-year period or so. So we're working on our capital plan to integrate ADA as sort of a bucket that we're making sure that we're attacking those barriers. And as we do new projects, that's always something we code as well as look at that. We're doing that. So this plan will help us focus our energy in hitting those critical gaps in accessibility, and then also help us as we're developing new parks and properties to have those considerations and some things to help us with that.
Are you expecting to request dedicated ADA bond? I mean, I guess the question is, working in a much larger park system, we had 13,000 ADA deficiencies after doing our ADA plan, it was not feasible to correct.
Yeah, right.
Most of them in the 20-year span. So what is your sort of thought process around? Are you treating it as a capital facilities plan as part of it or a standalone?
Well, I think what we're trying to do is twofold. Is I think you're right. As end of life and major maintenance occurs, that's where a lot of those updates are going to occur. So that is part of the standard practice that most park districts will utilize. In addition, what we're trying to do is in our capital plan right now, we've identified some categories for preventive maintenance, and similar within our goals is trying to come up with a number that we're trying to focus for some of those standalone ADA or additives. So for example, at Hazeldale, we were going to be working on the parking lot and making it paved. That's scopes change into making it's going to probably be enlarged. That's a bigger master plan issue, as well as we're looking at that broader ADA improvements. We identified, thanks to staff, a 2017 survey of deficiencies, and we're trying to integrate that into the project as well. One of those is getting to the bathroom. Now, the bathroom itself is not accessible, but to getting to the bathroom is sort of the step one. So making sure the parking lot and access to those two shelters and the bathroom. And then we can then look at the building itself is historical. And so it's a different process for us to widen a door or to make some of those changes. And so those are some of the things we're going to be looking at through this. And so you're right. We're going to be chasing our tail, or is that dragon always eating itself sort of thing for all of our capital programming and ADA. It's just one of those that's going to be difficult. And I hope we don't have 13,000 line items, but we will have a lot just because we have a system that's old and new,
and just the slightest change. And so if something met, like a sidewalk met it, and then there's a little settling, and now there's a half inch, now it doesn't meet that spec. And so there's just little things like that just happen here
we
in the Northwest.
We don't have many buildings too, so I think we'll be okay.
It's safe to say that any building that was built before 1986 won't meet ADA, or 1990 even. The doorways are substandard, but the whole point in the transition plan is you identify sort of the high barriers, things that are the most important, and you start there. And as Rocky mentioned, in the preventative, we may have a preventative maintenance category. I see it as I'm unpeeling this onion that it's probably going to be more of a major maintenance category, because a lot of the things that we're going to be doing are going to be more capital items. A perfect example is we've got a playground replacement project budget under major maintenance. So we have $500,000 every year to do two playgrounds. And so we'll do something like that. And then also part of the transition plan is tracking the things that you are doing, so you can demonstrate that you're making forward progress. A lot of what we're doing is sort of napkin level planning of tackling this or that, like the Hazeldale project. It's not, I saw it as an opportunity to improve the access from the parking lot to the shelter, from the shelter to the bathroom. And then research, I think Lindy turned up this 2017 evaluation of the site. All of the planning and development staff are committed to, to identifying these barriers and tackling them. It's just, are we getting the worst issues addressed, or are we getting the ones we find? And so part of what Jacob's going to be doing is going out and doing, adding a layer of sort of condition assessment to our inventory. We have a really good park inventory, but we don't know what the condition of the things are. So I can click on any bench in the system, but I know in most cases what kind of bench it is, but I don't know when it was installed, and I don't know if it's falling apart. So we're gonna tackle that as well, so we can print out all the failing benches in the system and say we need to put all of our preventative maintenance money for park amenities preservation and replacing all the benches. Or for the next 5 years, we have to replace all the benches. So that's a rabbit hole we can go down. No problem.
And then, and the broader Public Works is doing this contract. I think they're contracting with PBS.
PBS is doing a DEI plan for Public Works, and so that's why we're going to sort of fall under that.
All right, so at this time in the manager's report, I have an Open Public Meeting Act training, so to help make sure that we're all following all these plethora of rules we have, I have an option, dealer's choice. So we can go through the PowerPoint of lesson one and lesson three, or just lesson one, or I can let you guys do it on your own, and you affirm that you've done that training, and we'll get it trained. So it's lesson one is 13 slides, and I can throw it up on the screen and we can go through it. But at the same time, I want to respect your guys' time and your how you want to learn.
When I was in the Salary Commission for the city, we did it ourselves,
yeah,
and then we had to do it, PowerPoint, and then you had to show that you did it.
Yep.
And our board takes it to MRSC. I thought it was free. It's almost exactly the same. In fact, I think maybe it's the same. Free online training.
Yeah, and there's, we're starting to get all of our boards in Parks and Lands to kind of go through this, so that we have that base level of open public meetings, our process, just to make sure we've got a basic level understanding of all the rules, so that we're following the right process, such as making sure that we don't have a quorum of another decision making council.
We can address that on our end.
Yeah. No, but it's but again, that's the same thing as making sure we know what our quorum is, what the
the records are, what stuff we can discuss. When, you know, for example, we're not eligible for executive session to talk about real estate or personnel items because we're not a policy. We're not a, we don't make decisions, we make recommendations to council.
And that was my question. We're purely advisory, so I know there's just slightly different game plan for that, but our job is to provide recommendations based on council priorities. And I want to just reiterate that, that we're not setting policies or anything like that. I'm okay with what the salary commission did. We could do it online.
Yeah, we just did it online, and it looks like it's exactly the same thing. I remember the state attorney general talked in the online.
And I just wanted to provide two options.
To see it here. I mean,
I already went through it online.
Hoorah.
Great. So send us a link or I'm going to get in. Or
it's there, but we can make sure we send you the little.
What was that?
It should be up there. I thought there was a hyperlink on
the original agenda.
But we can clarify, and it's lesson one and
three.
Okay. And then at the next meeting, we can affirm, and then we can create a really cool certificate for everyone. And
you can hang it on your refrigerator.
No frames.
Unless we can find them in service.
All right, perfect. Well, then that makes that easy for me, and I can log out of being online. And then you just have to see my face up there. All right. Unfinished business, so I have an informational item in regards to our park fees review subcommittee update. So I figured I would let Jim and Don provide a quick overview, and then I was going to talk about the themes just to get us starting to think, because next month we'll be coming back with a report and some recommendations from the subcommittee.
Well, like you said, I think there was 41 pages on that one. It's in my inbox yesterday. We've been for the last 4 months, 5 months, 4 months, been meeting on a monthly basis. Staff and Rocky have been, they've been gathering information on comparable costs, parking fees, field fees, and picnic shelter fees, and that sort of thing around the country. Who's doing what and what we're charging, and we're evaluating those, what we've got together, and kind of coming to a conclusion of kind of how we want to proceed and recommend that fees go forward.
And so there's been no fee changes since 2010, so it's been only 14 years before any fee change, if one is proposed, to go to council for a recommendation and adoption. Lots changed in 14 years, of course.
What's the reason that it's been so blame it on COVID?
We did a study during COVID, actually, and it just got too busy.
It's a combination of things. And so back when it was considered before, and when they were entered, we were part of a different, we were the Vancouver Clark Park District, and so that's when it occurred. A couple years later, we changed, we separated, and now it became just a county only. During that time, 08 to, I don't know exactly when, parking fees were, there was a huge economic, the housing issue, and so during that period of time, the housing, so there was sort of a moratorium, and they stopped having parking fees, I think, until 2017. And then parking fees started again. And that was, those were policy decisions that were made. So when there was, it's always that thing that we look at, not just what our needs are as a department or a division, but also looking at the greater economic and other factors out there. And so my philosophy is that we should look at it once a year. Whether we make any recommendations, we should just check in to make sure. My last park system, we identified that our cost for like a campsite, we had campgrounds down there, was higher than what we were charging. And so, and we were subsidized through other funding streams. And so that creates a not a good business decision. And so again, this review allows us to kind of make those recommendations. And so through this process, I think we're looking at a couple themes, and Don and Jen will chime in as. So for like our shelters, we're trying to look at popularity. So how often something's used. So some of our assets are underutilized. And so we'd like to steer people to those to where they get used more. And so having a lower price for those versus sort of low, high, medium right now. And also looking at a price that's related to capacity. So right now we sort of have three flat rates. So we have a low rate, a medium rate, and a high rate. But on the high rate, you could be anywhere from having 100 to 216 occupancy, but you're paying the same rate. And so from a fairness, trying to look at that, our cost goes up. So for garbage and toilet paper and all those things, we're trying to offset that as well. So that's a thing, a theme that you'll see when the report comes out for our next meeting, is trying to look at that rate. And then we looked at what in the general area where others are at, what they're charging, and trying to compare not only shelter to shelter, but amenities and other things. So that's a difficult subjective thing to do. You know, one's right by a really cool lake, yeah, versus that really cool shelter. One's on the Columbia River, you know, versus something that's just in a neighborhood park in another jurisdiction. So we're trying to look at, trying to compare apples to apples the best we can. So some jurisdictions have a lower rate, some have higher than us, and just trying to look at that. Our parking fee is pretty complex. We have four different rates. Yet 95-96% of our daily parking fees are from one class. So again, the idea is maybe to go to one rate for all types of vehicles, just to simplify it for our seasonals that are in the booth. And for people trying to scrounge around $1, $4, $8, $3, you know, that sort of a thing. We're also looking at the four parks we currently have parking fees at, and looking at what do they offer that's different and unique from other similar parks. And so considering, should we consider more properties that are destinations, either for a sport or a scenic destination, for a parking fee, and that'll be something for you guys to review. So thinking about here at Luke Jensen, it's in the MPD, the Metropolitan Park District, but there's a capacity issue and it's a destination, so it gets used a lot. And so we want to consider a parking fee here to help generate revenue to manage that use level. There's pros and cons to that. Same thing with Moulton Falls, or Lackamas Lake. You know, each one of those is unique, one's kind of in the city. So again, but still thinking about that stuff and making some of those recommendations. Each one of those is difficult. At the same time as user fees and shelter fees is a way of taxation for the individual who's using it versus the other model, which is taxing a little to everyone to make sure that the whole group gets those benefits. And so that's part of that tough decision and process for your guys' recommendations to council. It'll be if there were any changes in those fees, that's going to be a tough decision for councilors as well. And so that's something we want to make sure that we're reviewing, being thoughtful, any recommendations we are making, we've got some reasoning behind it, something to help.
Have you gotten a sense of in which direction they're leaning? I guess the reason why I ask, this is codified, right? Your fee amounts may not be. I don't believe they are. In some places they are, but I don't believe they are here in the county. But the parking fees, I'm almost 100% sure, are codified. So like how often you review, how they're set, I believe that's in the code. At a minimum, I would like to see it. I could look on, on city, whatever, county webpage myself. My other thought is, and I'm an extrovert, so forgive me, sometimes I have to say it to hear how it sounds. Usually for a fee setting process, you have to do some sort of a formula that shows, based on your level of service, what does it cost you? Mm-hmm. So have we done that level of due diligence? And I ask because we did start, so there should be something in files if there isn't.
We are doing a part of that We're also looking at a bigger discussion, which we don't have set up, is a cost recovery plan or policy for our division. So that's another element of that a lot of communities will go through and set a cost recovery so that, you know, what's the example? So it's having a neighborhood park shelter that's free and open to everyone, because it's just the benefit of that, of anyone as a community benefit, versus yoga lessons for Rocky. And so I'm the only one that benefits from those yoga lessons. So therefore, the cost recovery is going to be higher for that versus that neighborhood park or that shelter. And so there's a pyramid or other sliding scales, sort of that symbology to kind of show that cost recovery. And that's something we have been talking about through these meetings as well. And it's a almost a separate topic, I think, in regards to a bigger engagement. Whatever our my proposal will be is, once we get through May, we'll present a information on that report, and we would then have a public comment opportunity online to be able to get feedback. And then when in June we come back, we'll have that data to then allow those recommendations to move forward. And we're trying to look at and part of my understanding of my duty is that, from a fiduciary perspective, we have to look at all the different tools we have to meet our funding needs to meet that level of service. And one of those is fees, one of those is a levy rate. So within the Greater Clark Park District, that's a different way of doing a levy lift. There's a lot of these different tools, and we're just trying to make sure that we're looking at all those so that when it does get to council to make a decision for Kathleen to work to determine, well, we want to do this or that we're not just making it isolated, that we've kind of looked at all these different things and to figure out how that fits into the bigger picture. Right now, our
public process around that, I think that's really key.
Will the report include any projections of like how any increase in fees will decrease demand, or raising parking fees by a dollar, will that increase or decrease like 10% of people who might want to come to a park?
John, you made the assumption that that there's going to be an increase. It's a broader look at all the fee schedule across all the services that we're providing to make sure that it's fair and equitable. In some cases, it may decrease. In some cases, it may increase. So you overall, it's just a complete deep dive into the data. And what Rocky didn't really note, and Jim was probably thinking it too, is we dove in it pretty heavy. And if you look at some of the specifics and the peculiarities throughout the county, you're going to find just some fees that just don't make sense, right? Not only for public, but from a management perspective, or even from an access perspective. It's like, where in the world did this number come from? And we saw a few of those. Rocky, I think you probably agree with it. And so I think that's what this committee is trying to get after, is a comprehensive look at the fee schedule so that we can defend our work, right? And just critically thinking about it so that we can articulate it to the council and they can make an informed decision. That's really what we were trying to get after. And we did notice a lot of things that just didn't pass the common sense test. And I would hope that at the end of this, the work will show that we did peel back the onion, as Eric said earlier on, and make sure that we can present the data in a logical manner. Does that make sense, John?
Yeah, that was a great answer. I appreciate it.
Is there any information tying in with what John said? Other places that have had fee increases, did anything decline though? With the were increases, like picnic shelters, camping spots, and there's a high demand for these now.
Right. So when we looked at the data internally from what we did have, we saw the last time the fees changed, there was a slight dip for a year or two, and then it increased beyond that. Anecdotally, in my last system, I had campgrounds over the coast, and we were charging $25 a night for a campsite. I raised the price to $45 and my utilization went up. I raised it to $65, it went up even more. And so sometimes it depends upon the asset and what people are looking for. It depends. But I think we through this whole process have continued to try to understand what are these impacts. So if the fee does go up, how does that, what are those implications for someone who is on a tight income? You know, what are these other ways that we can figure out how to allow the same opportunities where there isn't a fiscal barrier for some of this access. And so it's a tough thing. At the same time, you know, like our park permit fees, it went from, we have four tiers right now. Tier one is 1 to 100 people is $25. Tier two is 100 to 200, and it goes to 250. So there's a huge jump. And is that equitable? So again, we looked at some ways of trying to figure out how do we make that barrier that, oh, I have 101 people, now my fee went up, was that 10 times?
if you're going to pay, you just happen to have 90 people, and you're really going to have 115.
And we've been looking at the other implementation, our policies and procedures we have to be working on. You know, for field rentals, we have our field rates. We have some fields we charge nothing for and take a lot of work for us. And we have some fields that we do charge. We have some fields that we have an agreement with the league, and they take on part of the operational or the maintenance costs. And so, again, we're trying to look at that as well. Is if you're in this neighborhood, field's free. If you're in this neighborhood, you're paying an hourly rate. Does that make sense as well? So, again, we're trying to look at all these things so that when we do come forward with the report, hopefully it won't be as thorough as we want it to be. Never is, but it's going to be pretty comprehensive and allow us to draw, hopefully, out the nuances to where you guys can ask great questions and make a recommendation. Either way, you know, it's my job to do the work and put it in front of you guys for that consideration to then move it forward to council.
It just reminds me that it might be a time to promote the annual parking permit, though. Isn't that still $30?
It is $30. That's
a long discussion about that, though.
Right. And at $30, that's 8.2 cents per day. That's a...
Isn't that a what car you drive, right?
It's like a fifth. Yeah, but if it's a regular car, I mean, that's actually $30 is 8.2. It's always 8.2 cents because you're only paying 30. But that's a $1,300 to $1,500 savings if you went every day and paid parking fee. Now, most people don't go to a park that requires parking fee every day, but a lot
five
of
times parking, and you're done like twice.
And so, you know, we've considered a sticker program on your versus a hang tag. We've looked at a lot of those things and trying to think from an operational our capacity to manage it, as well as the fiscal impacts to the community, as well as the revenue to offset our costs. So it's been a thing. I just wanted to kind of just continue to update you guys, get you guys thinking and preparing for when this report comes and we talk about it. And if there's some, you know, there's been some great comments tonight that'll help inform our final discussion next week with the steering committee, and ultimately that 400-page report, no, report to identify and so with that, everyone got their handy dandy binder, so I'm pretty proud that we were able to get that out.
It's,
yes. Thank you for meeting with us, making this awesome.
And we're trying to every meeting we'll try to take on one of these topics and go a little bit more in depth to answer the questions. It's going to take us a while. We have a complex park district or system with different funding streams, different nuances for different park types and things. And so I know it. It's taken me a long time, and I still don't get it right myself, and I do it every day. So I look forward to walking this path with you guys.
I have one thing to add that I forgot to mention during my capital update. We are going to be doing a big parking lot repair at a timeline.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week, they're going to be replacing some concrete at the sort of entry plaza by the bridge by the pond. It's broken up and is no longer accessible. Then the following week or the week after that, we're going to be removing a half an acre of asphalt and replacing it. And what's that? The
parking lot there?
Yeah, it's about 40% of the parking lot's going to get removed and replaced. Then
just
we'll.
When the weather gets nice.
What's that?
Just when the weather gets nice.
It has that's what we need to do. This is a constant battle with major maintenance where the public wants something to get fixed, but they don't want to be inconvenienced by the fix. And so after the pavement gets replaced, we're going to do what's called a cave seal. So the whole parking lot will be the same color, and then it'll get restriped. It's not the most glamorous project in the world, but it is going to have a huge impact. Everyone will see, and everyone will use the parking lot, most of the park. So if you hear complaints about it, do our best to minimize the impacts. We won't allow the contractor to close the parking lot on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So they if they have to carry over to the next week, which they say they're not going to, then they have to get the parking.
Any news on the splash pad inside of the park?
The splash pad, we have done a lot of maintenance on that, and we've considered replacing sort of all of the plumbing inside the maintenance room, but we've discovered routine maintenance is sort of part of the recipe. I believe last fall they vacuumed out all of the sand and the sand filter and replaced it, and it runs perfectly now. And so we're going to monitor it this year. And at one point we had talked about spending $100,000 to sort of replumb it. We gave the maintenance one last try, and it seemed to have done a real good job at the end of the year. So we're going to monitor it really closely this year.
We found the staff there, plan, the maintenance plan as well.
Yeah, sure. Operations and maintenance plan.
It appeared that maybe some of the routine maintenance wasn't being done on the prescribed regiments, and so we're hoping.
Well, I think during COVID especially was sort of like on the back burner because
it closed down. So it was it's something we get a lot of comments on.
You do.
And it was going down a lot, and so it was creating a very large workload. So we were looking to make that large investment, but once we vacuumed out, it was like butter.
They the rest just of the sand needed to be replaced.
That's so great, you guys. Nice job.
And we're going to be replacing the shelter that got hit by the coffee. Yes. And very next question. We finally got our shoreline exemption to demolish the shelter, which we demolished last year. Sorry, Amber, if you're listening. But we did get permission to take it out while we were waiting for our demolition permit, our shoreline exemption for our demolition permit. Now we're working on getting a set of drawings and specifications together. We did go through the a statewide price agreement to get a price for a shelter, and it was four times as much as the price I got outside of the price agreement. And so we decided we would go ahead and bid it. And the structure will be similar to the laminated, the glue lam picnic shelter that's currently on site, the larger shelter. It'll be the same footprint as the current shelter because it is in the shoreline zone. We hope to have that shelter replaced this year. We will have that shelter replaced this year. Now that I said that, we won't for some reason.
Yes, we will fail at doing.
Yeah.
But we will try. That's my.
I think that's going to go to bid in May. And we usually have like a 3-week bid process. And the problem is delivery of materials. We're still working on the bathroom at, or not the bathroom, the playground at Cozy Camp. Because the playground equipment showed up 9 months after they said it was going to or something like that. So, but
really cool playground.
We can't wait to help you cut the ribbon.
Yeah, Cozy Camp is looking to be hopefully done in, say, June.
I'm at Thursday.
And Hawkinson is soft opened, so I think you can use this. Not where it gets close to being able to throw your disc out and play it around, but we project won't be finished until September, hopefully earlier, because we have to rock the trail and we have to finalize some permitting to do that to reduce our long-term maintenance. And we're waiting on one more little thingy and some planting at Philida to, and that should be done in, say, June as well.
Did you find anything else about the Lacamas Park?
Yes.
Cast that were not approved.
Yes. So, we identified that the group that was out there who's on Facebook doing that work was affiliated with our Adopt a Park agreement. They'd had a change in leadership, and it appears that they went out and did the work. And so now we've met internally to determine what we're going to do. Through that process, we identified that there was a trails plan that was done back in 2016, and we're going to use that as our guidebook in regards to future actions there. Essentially, we're going to re-engage and make sure that the new person is aware of our process, which is you provide us notice before you go out there, you provide us documentation of what you're planning to do. We're going to limit the scope to be purely maintenance based off of the existing footprint, so there's no expansion, no development, and potentially working on a no net increase. So the trail plan identified a lot of trail diet that needed to go on due to fall line trails or going through areas that are sensitive. So
they want to. They want to go everywhere.
We're continuing to work through that process, and so we're trying to take a comprehensive approach to make sure that we have our volunteer and communications team as well as our operations team there, and that meeting and in our planning. So we're trying to make sure everything gets funneled through David and along with it. So. As each arm of our operation has different experience, and so our operations know what needs to be done and maintaining it, but they may not know permitting or land use or plan elements. A lot of them do, but again, that's, we all have our own sort of expertise on those things, and so we're trying to make sure that being very bureaucratic, some might say, but we're trying to make sure that we're doing that comprehensive. And I believe that we've circled back around with his name just is.
That guy that spoke.
Yeah. Topher. Thank you, Topher. I got to think of that 70s show. Topher, and he will be part of that. And I think we're trying to bring a comprehensive group together as well, towards not just the adopters, but those other vested stakeholders.
We shouldn't be doing anything out there that's not in the trails plan. And they appear to not know that there's a trails plan, or they appear to know that we don't know that there's a trails plan, so they're out there doing what they want to do.
We're going to
put the sideboards back up and talk about, like Rocky said, that there are trails in the trails plan that are identified for closure, and we're considering making a condition of the Adopt a Park agreement that if you open something, you need to close one of the trails that needs to be. We don't want this braided segmentation of habitat going on out there that's currently going on out there, and 8 foot wide banks, trails that taking pictures of and being proud of.
Sounds like they were well intentioned, just need to be educated and redirected.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a philosophy of asking for forgiveness instead of permission.
They did ask us to come out and approve something that they built.
So.
After they build it up.
I, Rocky and I both have years and years of experience with the mountain bike community. I've been mountain biking since the 80s. And they're just really gung-ho and ambitious and focused on sort of flexibility in the trail systems that they use. So they can have a 3 mile loop and a 4 mile loop and a 5 mile loop and a 6 mile loop, and it's called a stacked loop. And that typically doesn't ever get a blessing from an environmental permitting organization. It's a habitat issue. And they are well intentioned for their user group.
No, I
think there's also the, you know, was the state lobbying challenged around recreational immunity and the liability that it presents for local park system. Having someone who's not cooperating can be quite challenging. So maybe that's something that needs to be point of education too. Because I don't know, they might be a third party liability.
Yeah, you know, and we'll use the baseball analogy. I think we all, you know, everyone gets some chances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first chance is to make sure we're educating people. The second chance, if it continues to be, is we start to reduce the scope. And then eventually, hopefully, it never gets to that thing where we have to talk about separation. And I've had to fire volunteers. It's never a process.
We don't want to do that,
but I want to take care of that. Yeah, so our goal is, I think they have great intentions, we have good intentions, and we're just trying to blend them together because it's a multi-use system, and there's a lot of feelings. And so it's
they're great partners. They have the resources that the equestrian community had back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s to go out and actually do things. And it's just a matter of harnessing all that enthusiasm and energy and making sure that they're building things that are sustainable and maintainable. And in this case, especially this piece of property usable by all the users that are out there, not exclusive or intimidating for hikers because of the speeds that the bicycles are carrying are so high. When you start to build bank turns, you can just really goes fast, blind corners.
And that's where, you know, there's some one-way trails there to provide that opportunity. You know, and I think we're a product of our own success. We have great parks, our population's burgeoning. There's continued to be additional pressures and demands on our parks. And so it makes having fun a job and really managing it. So. But I think our initial discussions were positive. I think we've got an action plan, and over the next few months, we're hoping to have everything firing in the right direction again. And, you know, Whipple Creek's one of those properties that, gosh, there's two or three houses going up around it, and so it's going to have a change in its use level as well that we're going to have to look at. It was designed and back in the early 90s, so. It was out of boonies back then. Now it's going to have, you know, one or two houses around it. So that's another thing we're going to look at. You know, it's all these properties that used to be boot in a boot are now front country, almost, you know, downtown kind of trails. And so that
I just did some trail maintenance with TKO Oregon over on Scouter Mountain. Mm-hmm. This huge development right next door. If you come in, it's this huge. So they wanted an access to the park, and so so now they got slapped, and so now TKO is building a real trail, and so you're out there putting drainage in, you know, doing all the things you need to do. It's gonna be a nice little fantastic for them, for that community coming into it.
Same pressure at Green Mountain, all those homes being built around Green Mountain, and they're building trails. There's ATV use out there now, and there's equestrian use out there, and it's not, you know, it's timber property.
Damage. I don't think they realize that.
They're doing weed management, and they're doing it wrong, and the way they're doing it is they're spreading the weeds. Danielle was on the phone a minute ago, and she was talking about how they're basically just broadcasting the the weed seed, the way they're doing the weed management, because they're cutting and instead of killing it with chemical. And so just trying to manage the good intentions, and it gets really challenging to just continually tell somebody, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You can't do that. No, you can't do that, because.
And they think, and they look at it as, well, I'm just trying to improve the area.
Yeah, we look like we're obstructionists, but it's like, you know, we can't keep up.
Yeah, and that education is tough, because I'm killing it.
I think the why is clearly very important, right? Things like that. And the reason why I brought up the whole issue with recreational immunity challenges that we're seeing throughout the state of Washington, certainly King County is quite hard, is that there is a liability component that I think we've enjoyed for many years in parks, and I work both in Oregon and Washington, where it's like, well, you know, it just happens, right? It's a park, a tree fell in your head. Well, if you knew that the tree was going to fall on their head and it fell, you are
liable. The tree was, like you're doing the cutting down of dangerous branches. So if you know there's dangerous branches, you don't do it, then someone says, oh, you should have cut that.
Let's not just say that that's the why, right, of why people should stop, but it's one of the whys that I think we need to.
Have you trimmed every dangerous branch? We would use all of our major maintenance money, especially with the way development
is occurred. You know, there should be a waiver, personal responsibility of walking outside. Anything can happen.
Well, we have, you know, the hazard tree program, the project that we did on Heritage Trail, Lacamas Heritage Trail, that was because the condos were built 15 feet from the property line.
Has that changed the setbacks?
And so there are these, you know, 60-inch diameter Douglas firs that the branches have been, or the roots have been cut because of the grading.
I was just out there.
Well, a lot of them were dead, but we did that last
year. How do people want more light?
No, there was a lot of. It's not just the condo. We have a lot of people who live next to our properties that that have built a beautiful brand new house. And I understand it was a property owner, and you've got these big trees. Some of them are healthy, but they're big and they're reaching out over. And so there's a concern. And there's the alternative is that the development is allowed to be right up to the property line or real close to
right
it.
There.
And through that work, there's impacts to the root structure, and it's a few years later or decades later sometimes when those trees start continue to grow that they start to create a potential hazard or a perceived hazard. And I think a lot of our work is doing that, is going out and there's two sets of rules sort of. So if I'm a homeowner and I want to cut a tree down, and you would go to community development and submit an application, the forester would go out. And that definition is 1.5 times. So if the tree's 100 feet, you can draw a circle 150 feet around. And it's not whether the condition of the tree is there a target within that 150 feet, which then allows you to cut the tree down. Our philosophy is not that it's our tree, it's healthy, there's not a target. So it's healthy. So we try not to cut the tree down in short. And if it is segregated, that's the wrong word, but I'll use that word, segregated in some way, and there's a target, then we're going to be proactive in getting rid of it. If it's starting to fail or it's dead, but there's no target, we monitor it because it's having snags and stuff as another habitat.
You still allow the homeowner, I mean, they can under state law to limb you up all the way up.
If it's on their side of the property, we give them permission to do this stuff on their property. Most homeowners don't want to do that. They don't want the cost.
I know. Trust me.
And so that's the dance that occurs is we go out, we have an arborist, he takes a look at it, and he says this tree's healthy. And then we say, if you have a concern, allow you to cut the limbs. And some homeowners have taken us up on that. Some can don't like it, continue to
communicate their frustration and their concern. And in their eyes is, if I identify something I think is a risk today, and sometime in the future it does fall down, that they believe that, see, I told you, and you know, we have a big windstorm, 80 mile an hour winds come all of a sudden, all kinds of healthy trees come down sometimes. And so, again, we're just trying to, and the trees. And so, you know, we're working on a couple properties right now where we're working through that. Same time as I can't spend $4 million a year on clear cutting all of my parks to make sure there's a 150 foot buffer from
every house. You make toilet paper though, I mean, think about it. It's cost recovery.
We have in our preventative maintenance, the preventative maintenance portion, vegetation management. And so that's primarily right now being used for hazard trees. Long haul, I would like it to be used 60% to replant things, 40% to cut down things. Right now it's about 80% to cut down things, 20% to replant things. And those are just sort of anecdotal percentages. But we are doing a fall planting using vegetation management money at Tiger Tree, which is a park that we took a lot of material down in, and in Jorgensen, which we're going to do a tree project in here with our spring tree project. So we'll buy a bunch of forest floor nursery stock and dead firs and some cedars and maybe some sequoias.
You even work with them.
Sequoias, even. I'm not so sure those will grow, but that's okay.
We just work with our habitat folks within the county that they buy material every year. We just sort of piggyback on that, and then we'll hire a contractor to do a small planting project. It's a few hundred things here, a few hundred things there. Because when you're talking about that bird, you don't need to plant. Unless you want to timber.
Well, and you know, and I think I learned from Don that there's a state program, and I'll perceive us as a private property owner, that Don will come out and assess and pay for everything, I think is what I heard.
DNR as well.
Don's paying for the trees. Nice.
I think that's that program. He's going to take care of it.
I did trade in my ticket book for a checkbook, so it's good. Yeah, having transitioned from DNR Recreation, I'm all too familiar with the mountain bike community in the vicinity of the Yakult Burn. I've got stories among stories, and mostly good, but some awkward. I wanted to take the opportunity to introduce or just bring up, because if we're doing roundtable now, Rocky.
Yes, sir.
Is the Yakult Burn Pick Up the Burn annual event. Annually, DNR prepositions some containers out in the woods, and everybody can come by, do their little part, pick up some trash and throw it in the bins. So the time is from 8 to 2 on that Saturday, the 29th, and there will be a barbecue, lunch, and a small raffle afterwards. So it's being sponsored by all of these communities that you see here. Trash No Land mainly deals with target shooting. Waste Connections, we're familiar with. The Jones Creek Trail Riders, the ATV and dirt bike community. Keep Nature Wild, that's a lot of the hiking groups. Backcountry Horsemen, we're familiar with. Chinook Trails and Evergreen, there's your mountain bike community. So have at it. And if anybody wants this, I can send it to Rocky and he can forward it.
Yes, please.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, the trail work, I mean, the Yakult Burn is the second busiest state forest that DNR manages outside of Capitol Forest. And the reason for that is simple. It's the close proximity to the metropolis known as Vancouver, Portland. And I mean, I've wore out Teresa and Jim in the past just talking about it. But if you want to know more about DNR and some of our programs, we can do a telephone consult, or I'll tell you about those as well. Because I've transitioned into the portion where we help private landowners meet their forest goals and objectives. And some of that is planting. And I don't know about Sequoia. You know, a lot of the elevations in Clark County, and the climate just isn't going to support their growth. There's only a few that I've ever seen in my short time in doing this that are doing well. So they need follow-up. So, all right, subject to that.
Just a quick one. We don't have officers, and then proposing we elect our officers at the next meeting. I think we got a chair, vice chair, or two co-chairs and a secretary that we have to fill.
That is correct. And so pursuant to the bylaws, that's to be done in December of every year because we didn't have a quorum. We didn't have an ability to elect officers this year. So Jim and I were talking about not doing it at this meeting, but to do it at the next meeting, if that makes sense to you guys. So look to your left, look to your right, identify the victims, potential officers. And if all the positions aren't filled, we need someone to run the meeting. Our chair is the core position. We've been taking over the minutes, so the secretary element is changed. So thank you, Amy. That way we're spending our time and focusing your energy on engaging with the matters and with the people.
Are you required by your bylaws to have a chair and co-chair? I can't remember, because I know for us, one of them has to be present at a meeting, otherwise we don't have a quorum. And the second question is, do you have to nominate at one meeting and elect at the next one, or can you do both?
We did it at the same meeting.
Okay, we did it at the same meeting.
So my homework to everyone is to review the bylaws and come back and tell me. It says here.
I don't think you do.
Section 3 and Section 4 is where I reference that. I do not see that requirement. I didn't read it very good.
Well, I could share a couple of things. They're really not mine to share, but in absence of our executive director for the Parks Foundation, so Clark County has a Parks Foundation, provides a lot of support to our local jurisdictions. They have grants and events and just a really great group of volunteers. Was an executive director usually who's here. I think there were your ex officio or our. So a couple of things that are coming up for them are, one, they're looking for a new executive director. So if you know anybody, please get the word out. They're closing the job posting on Friday. And then they have a luncheon, May luncheon coming up. It's on this
11th.
I was going to say 16th, but yep, 11th. It's kind of spendy, but it's worth it. It's a lot of parkings. It's people from all over.
Is it the Hilton again?
It was at the Hilton, I think so.
The AC, the new one down
at AC Marriott?
Yeah.
On the waterfront?
Yeah, waterfront.
Okay, that's right. Jim knows everything. That's it.
So it's May 11th?
May 11th,
yes. Yeah. And it's online. I could send it to you if you want to share it.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, because I know last year sort of the executive director had reminded me as well. I used the new card.
It's okay, you can use it forever.
Yeah, so you keep shaking your finger at me. So we had a couple staff that attended last year. So I think seems like there's two or three other things happening on May 11th, though, for some reason.
Well, they have a Facebook, but Parks Foundation has a Facebook. It's on their Facebook.
And they announce typically at that luncheon the grant awards for the next year. I know they had a lot of requests this year, and previous executive director was scrambling to find the money to allow all of us in the park and rec world to receive those gifts. We had an application in there this cycle, so yeah. And they have awards they give out as well, so food is usually, there's a dessert that I shouldn't.
Wine would help, but it's lunch.
This works, so I can't do that. But yeah, that new restaurant down on the waterfront, great job. You know, and I want to commend staff. It's amazing when we get people in, like the things David was talking about with line lines and some of these things. Just, you know, having the position, the person at the capacity to where they can focus on that. So Amy Wooten's been doing a great job for us in getting a lot of these things across the line, getting them out to bid. You know, all those takes more time than you think. And, you know, I think when we had a few less people in that section, it became overwhelming for the individual to try to do all those things. So in the short time I've seen them, where we brought on David and having Lindy and Amy, it just allows us to get a little deeper and a little farther. And I'm super excited to see over the next year as we double that size of that unit, just how we're meeting that deferred maintenance and the development needs.
Well, even with all the new positions you got, and that is great, that's huge. You're still under resourced. I speak from experience, so kudos to you guys for pushing so much work out. Please build Curtain Creek. That's really honestly why I'm here. It's next to my house.
I think we
have. I'm in my backyard. I became the in my backyard person.
These darn NIMBYs. You're like an anti.
I was. I don't want to drive her to Rugby. I have to drive her to Rugby, like to Portland. You know, I don't want to drive her to Portland.
It would be great.
We went to Glen Haven every weekend for her games, and I'm just like, seriously, come on, at least one field. We just need.
Yeah, the amount of development that's across the street now there from 72nd and 119. I mean, there's two or three apartment complexes have gone up like that, and I know there's a bunch of other
developments. There's a couple more going in, too.
Yeah, so it's, and I know we've got a sewer line that we're working with CRUD to come through the project, another wrinkle, to meet that demand. So we, I believe the supplemental budget, I think it's going to council to get approved. I don't think it went last time. I think it's going. And once we get that, then we'll be able to get the revised 70% designs, get it in permit. We've got the agreement with the city for, I know it's boring stuff, but the land was bought by the city with our funds and fire department funds. And then when we separated, we got an easement to build the park, but there was no access. And so this was to help us to make sure we have our property, not just an easement. And an access guaranteed, so it's a process. So and just that the every time we go the next at 10% we're over budget, we cut some things. 30% we're over budget, we cut some things. At 60% we cut some more things before 60%, and we're still over budget, and so we're just trying to right size it. So and hopefully through the process, the community, the understanding is that we're gonna have to phase the project to eventually get everything done. But you know, we have a decision of building out one park and not being able to meet the other recreational needs in that PIF district, and so that's a balancing act, kind of like all the fees we were talking about, trying to get as much done as we can and be able to do some of those other things, because there are some close to home neighborhood parks that we need to develop as well. With that, I guess we just need an adjournment.
Recommend as we get anything else to do.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Don. Councilor Allen, Councilor Marshall, thank you.
Yep.